At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today is Monday, August 12th, 2024. And let me tell you, it's been a pretty exciting Monday for us over here in Los Angeles. Earlier in the day, there was a 4.4 magnitude earthquake about 2 miles from my house. My cats were running. My girlfriend was running. I, of course, will admit that I was brave in the face of danger. And so should there be an aftershock during the show, I will sit right in this seat because we have some important work to do today. And that work is the same work we come here to do each and every day, and that is to help you and even help me become a better and more informed investor through the topics that I bring to the show, but more importantly, through the topics that you bring to the show in the form of your finance and investment questions. Now, with that being said, we'll run down today's show topics and talk about the market today and what to look forward to this week as well a little bit later on. But let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, I'm calling today to get your quick analysis on a kind of smaller energy, oil, and gas company. WHD is a ticker symbol, Cactus Inc. I was wondering if you think this is a good company and what would be a good buy point if you like it all. Thank you very much. Appreciate what you guys do. Bye.
So Cactus Inc., ticker WHD, what they do is they manufacture and sell wellheads to oil field companies. And they've had some pretty consistently good growth over the past couple years. From 2021, the revenue's up from $438 million to $1.09 billion last year, projected to be $1.1 billion this year. Over the 5-year time frame, that's an average growth of 15%. And in that time, their margins have been improving as well. 9% margins back in 2018, then 13%, all the way up to 15.4% last year, projected to be 19.4% this year. And so there are a couple red flags here, I would say, with this company. The first is that they have a dual share classification, where 18% of the shares outstanding of the company is actually held in private hands by, I believe, the family members of the founders of the company. So there are some governance issues there. Those are certainly things you should be looking at when you look to own a company, if there are governance issues which may contribute to misaligned incentives between you, the normal shareholders, us, the normal shareholders, and those private grandfathered in, if you will, shareholders that own 18% of that company. So that's a red flag. But I think the bigger problem here, and the reason why I'm hesitant to buy it, it is expensive, first and foremost, trading at a price to book of 4, upper end of its range. But I think looking ahead, while you have oil demand eventually going to peak, probably the end of this decade, you're going to have a lot of consolidation. And you've already started to see some consolidation within the oil industry and the energy industry at large. And so as that happens, what you end up having is a customer base that has way more pricing power than it's ever had. And they will use that pricing power. They will use that desire to become more efficient in a way that drives down the costs of doing business and therein drives down what Cactus is going to be able to charge. So I think going forward, what you probably are going to see is declining margins towards the end of the decade. It's already a little bit expensive right now. It has done well. It's up 32% year to date. It did have pretty good performance in the last quarterly report. But I think in the long term, with the consolidation of its customer base, I think margins are going to have to shrink. I think growth isn't going to be as robust as it has been over the past 5 years. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point today concerns this topic: sunk cost fallacy, how it impacts your investment decisions. The sunk cost fallacy is a cognitive bias where individuals or businesses continue investing in a project due to past investments despite current costs outweighing the benefits you could accrue. This bias often leads to irrational decision-making influenced by factors such as loss aversion, emotional attachment. So understanding and recognizing this fallacy, something that's very difficult to do even in day-to-day life, can help improve decision-making by focusing on future costs and benefits rather than irrecoverable past events. We'll also touch on OPEC. We already talked about oil a little bit, but OPEC lowering its demand forecast based on what they expect to be dampened Chinese demand. What does that say about the rest of this year? What does that say about the first half of next year? We'll also talk about hedge funds that are retrenching in the wake of a risk-off week towards the beginning of that week in light of the unwinding of a lot of yen carry trades. I'm sure Justin touched on that last week. I was a little sick, so didn't have much of an opportunity to listen to the show, but we'll touch on what the week ahead looks like for hedge funds and for risk-loving investors or investors that are willing to take on risk at all, should it be leveraged or unleveraged. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about U.S. consumer confidence and U.S. consumer midterm inflation expectations. How might that influence you? How might that influence the Fed? How might that influence the rest of this quarter? We also have some voice bank questions ready to play. One on CSIQ, which is Canadian Solar Inc., and another on the VIX, the fear gauge. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now or anytime throughout the show or any day, any time of day, any day of the week at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line, but I hope to hear from you live. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk,
Invest Talk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
Invest Talk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Welcome back, and let's dive right into the market. U.S. stocks were mixed and somewhat choppy, though still uneventful Monday. A lot ahead this week, which we'll talk a little bit about later on. But the S&P ended up unchanged after two straight days of gains last week that capped off a rebound from last Monday's sharp sell-off in the wake of a rise in Japanese interest rates, uncertainty about the economy, and what's going on in the Middle East. Our performers look like energy, copper, aluminum, precious metal miners, defense stocks, certainly, did well. Laggards include small caps, autos, media, REITs didn't do particularly well today. The dollar index was flat. Small caps were down 91 basis points. Gold finished up 1.2%. Crude oil, near best levels, up 4.2% today on the ramping of Mideast concerns. But overall, really not a lot of directional drivers in today's session, as the market continued to weigh some of the themes that it's been weighing for quite some time. The bullish side still revolves around a soft landing, disinflation, Fed pivot expectation, buybacks, and broadening earnings growth, some of the other bright spots that we've seen in the past couple weeks. But still, the biggest downside factor is headlines surrounding tension and rising tensions in the Middle East between Israel and Iran, which led to a little bit of a risk-off tone, Treasury rally and oil higher on that geopolitical risk. Other pieces of that bearish narrative that we saw today and that we've seen over the past couple weeks with the labor market softening, with broad U.S. consumer spending slowing down, skepticism about some of the aggressive Fed easing expectations that have taken hold in the market as of late, and really a lack of AI monetization are still not allowing the market to break out more broadly. New York Fed's latest survey of consumer expectations also came out. We'll talk about that later on. Showed one-year inflation expectations unchanged at 3%, though, interestingly enough, in the midterm, the three-year expectations down 60 basis points to 2.3%. But again, we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. Looking ahead to this week, big week in macroeconomic data. PPI comes in tomorrow before the open, CPI on Wednesday, and retail sales on Thursday. Now, shifting gears, let's head over to our InvestTalk YouTube comment bank and see what we have. All right. So this one says, what do you think about Uber? It dropped hard when Tesla announced their self-driving event and hasn't really recovered. So I think that's an important thing to know, right? When you talk about long-term drivers of market appreciation, of stock appreciation, of company success, the long-term driver of success is earnings growth. And so Uber recently has done pretty well. They had a strong Q2 report. Gross bookings grew by 19%. They've had a growing advertising segment that I think a lot of people didn't expect for them to have, their rideshare segment, a surprise to the upside as well. But the problem is the market is a what have you done for me lately? And so news that Tesla, that has a lot of money to burn, comes in and wants to enter the driverless car space, kind of makes people think about what driverless taxis would do to rideshares. Uber's success in capturing a market was that they came in, they made something incredibly cheap, they made it part of the daily life of individuals, and then they started raising prices when it was part of the necessity or necessary life of individuals. So the question has to be, what do you expect for the success of autonomous taxis going forward? I'm of the opinion that if it is to be successful, it's more of a long-term vision. Everything Tesla says they're going to do is delayed by several years. But the reality is Tesla is just one of many companies that is now coming in here and to not just try and take the market share dominance of Uber, but completely transform what the industry is. And so I think the sell-off was a little bit reasonable. And the broader issue is that even with that, though they did pop on earnings, they're trading at 38 times forward-looking price earnings. They're trading 11 times their book value, 30 times cash flow. And so when you talk about a company that, yes, has finally turned positive, good for you. The question then is, again, what have you done for me lately? What are you going to do for me later? So I think that the competition that is going to come in to this space and try and transform this space, it means that buying this at a 30 times forward-looking price cash flow is just not a reasonable trade to make. So too expensive. Going to be interesting to see how this market develops going forward. Let's go to James in New York, who has a question about Civi. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
I own it. I'm thinking of adding to it, but do you think that I should wait? I mean, it pulled back like along with everything else recently, but shall I wait to see if this shows a little more strength before I go and add more to my position?
Well, you know, so we own Civi for clients in one of our strategies. So that's an important thing to note there. And yeah, it pulled back as a lot of companies did with the unwind of a lot of hedge fund leverage, a story we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show. And it had a pretty good day today, up 2.5%. A lot of that driven from what I've already mentioned, which is the rise in tensions within the Middle East. And so interestingly enough, you can kind of think about this as a interesting energy sector show today, because we're talking about OPEC as our first talking point. We're talking about what's going on that will affect these things. I think in the near term, the uncertainty is what could be a big catalyst for a price movement upwards. This could go one of two ways, right? It could be exactly what happened before when rockets were launched, US and allies in the Middle East intercepted it. Nobody was hurt. There wasn't rising tensions after that. It could go a completely different way, which would be good for the price of oil. And so certainly none of us are hoping that things are bad, but the reality of it is we have to make informed investment decisions based upon what's out there. So in the short term, I would expect a little bit of volatility in this name. In the long term, I think that the overall rise in oil level prices is going to be a steady climb upward with a lower ceiling than it had before. But certainly in the pullback, we have been adding to our energy names. We've been adding to this name as well. So I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want a DCA dollar cost average into this name. It's at a very reasonable price. It's trading at less than its book value. So I think it's still trading a reasonable price. I think as oil demand picks up going into next year, I think this is a good name to have. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a short break, and still to come, more answers to your caller questions and our main focus point. This is Invest Talk, and we can't wait to hear from you. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about sunk cost fallacy and how it impacts your investment decisions, because it's an important part psychologically of how a lot of us operate. And so the sunk cost trap is a common psychological pitfall that can lead people to continue investing not only time, money, or other resources onto unprofitable or unproductive endeavors, projects, simply because they have already invested heavily and don't want to waste what they've already put into it. Now, this concept came to popularity in the business world with the notorious Concorde Jet program, which, despite its clearly diminishing returns, was completed due to massive prior investment. So how might this manifest itself in your life? Because certainly you're not funding the creation of a jet. Well, this might be watching a movie you aren't enjoying to the end because you feel like you've already spent that much time watching it. Could be holding on to losing investments or continuing a project with no clear benefit, all due to the initial time, money, resource investment that you've already made. From an emotional standpoint, this fallacy often involves a mix of hope, denial, reluctance to admit failure, shame. People might think that abandoning the project or investment is equivalent to admitting that your initial decision was wrong, which it's not. And that can be a tough pill to swallow. So how do we avoid this? Well, within investments, we can first set clear investment goals. We can define what success looks like for your investment, such as targeting a specific return percentage. This helps in making objective decisions about whether to continue or divest from an investment based on its performance relative to these preset goals and understanding of your return and risk objectives. We can set downside exit targets. For individual investments, you can set predetermined criteria for when you want to exit the position, such as a stop loss. Now, that can help in automatically cutting losses on investments that are underperforming and can prevent not only that, but further spending more time and money at a losing game. But most important with all of this is periodic review and adjustment. You need to regularly reevaluate your investment strategy and portfolio performance. If certain investments consistently fail to meet the benchmarks that you set out, those objective benchmarks that you set out, or contribute positively to your overall portfolio's performance or your overall health if it becomes too stressful, then you need to consider reallocating those resources to more promising areas. By understanding and actively managing against sunk cost traps, understanding psychologically what is going on there, you can make more rational decisions and focus more on the future rather than the past. Now let's keep it moving and play another question. This one came from our voice bank.
Hi, Justin, Luke. This is Andrew from Buffalo. I was wondering if you could give me your take on a stock called CSIQ, Canadian Solar. It's a stock that I've been in now for a couple of years, certainly before all the interest rate rises, and I've just kind of been weathering the storm on it. My break-even is around $17, and I'm just wondering if you think I'm better off holding on to it and seeing if it goes up with the interest rate decreases, or if I'm better off just cutting my losses and moving on to something else. Thanks again for all that you do, and appreciate the call. Thanks.
So CSIQ is Canadian Solar, and they make solar panels. And so, as the caller mentioned, it's been a bad time for solar panel companies with interest rates rising, because it's a very capital intensive business. How capital intensive? Well, this $900 million market cap company has $4.4 billion in debt. And that debt's been increasing, $2.5 billion in 2019 to $4.4 billion now. It's pretty levered. It's interest coverage ratio 2.59 times. Not a lot of room to wriggle around in there. The net margins are not that great. They've actually fallen from 6.3% down to 4.8%. Or sorry, down to 3.9%, projected to be 2.5% this year. And that's even with overall revenue growth of about 15%. Over the past 5 years, it's been pretty consistent, though the bulk of it appeared to be when a lot of people were spending money on their homes, 2021, early 2022. And you know, it's not all bad. This company has certainly been a beneficiary of reshoring manufacturing. They recently announced they were moving their manufacturing back to the US. So that's something that I do like. But if you take a look at their price, you take a look at their chart rather, and how it's looked over the past really 5 years, 3 years, that's a pretty consistent downtrend. And that's tracking where rates are going. And so it's broken past all support. It's trying to find a floor at this point. It's trying to find more support at this point. And so the contention that, oh, well, maybe when rates get cut, this company will do really well. I mean, the whole world at this point thinks that rates are going to start to be cut at the end of this year in September. And so the expectation of rate cuts are probably already priced into the expectation of where this company is going to go moving forward. So for me, small company, far too much debt. It really suffered, as a lot did, when rates were rising. It has some things going for it, like manufacturing moving back to the US, but just not enough to overcome that debt burden that they have. And certainly the market is signaling that. Still 13% short interest out there. So a lot of people think price is only going down. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, how Fed rate cuts impact stocks, bonds, and cash investments. With the Federal Reserve likely to lower interest rates in September, understanding the impact on financial markets is crucial. Fed rate cuts can influence stocks, bonds, cash investments, with reasons behind these cuts often being more significant than the cuts themselves. These changes can affect yields on treasury bills, savings accounts, and the broader market, necessitating potential portfolio adjustments to navigate the evolving economic landscape. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Go to John in St. Louis, who has a question about ALV Autoliv. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I own it. I just purchased a little bit today, though. I was just curious what you guys thought of the stock, if it's at a good price point to purchase more, basically what you guys think of Autoliv.
Yeah, of course. I think we actually had a caller call about this the other day. And Autoliv is a safety parts manufacturing company for cars, auto parts company. And year to date, it's done pretty poorly, down about 15%. In the 3 months, it's down 23%. And it's had some pretty stagnant growth prospects over the past 5 years. I mean, it's only had a 3.8% annualized growth rate over the past several years. Its margins have been improving from 4.3% to 5.5%, but certainly nothing crazy going on there. It's a $7.6 billion market cap company and has only about $2 billion in debt. So certainly debt load is not a big issue there. Its relative strength really dipped off in the past couple months. So that's certainly a sign that a lot of the market doesn't, perceive in the short term that this company is going to do particularly well. But I think correct me if I'm wrong, this company has a lot of exposure to autonomous vehicles, correct?
I'm not sure about its exposure to autonomous vehicles.
I'm thinking of a different company. Anyway, so this is... So this is an auto parts company. And generally speaking, I think the issue here for me is that although it's trading at a pretty decent multiple, right? It's trading at 3x book value, which is a little bit expensive for the business overall. Its forward-looking price to earnings is only about 9x, which is under its 5-year average. It's certainly good relative valuations there. I think that small margins with lack of growth over the past 5 years, but certainly over the past 3 years, even at a time when there was over-the-top costs within the auto industry due to supply chain constraints, their revenue margins didn't increase that much in 2021 and 2022. I think that's a little bit of a warning sign there. Generally speaking, it has a slight buy rating amongst the 27 brokers, target price of around 120. I'm not saying that it's not going to do well. It's certainly at a very fair price. It seems to be a well-run business. I think in the short to medium term, probably it might have some issues. I think you can probably put your money elsewhere in the short to medium term that can give you a better return. In the long term, it might be fine. But overall, I think the 5-year lack of growth is something that's a little bit concerning to me. It's not all bad. Like I said, it's pretty well diversified, 7% of its revenue comes from Europe, 22 comes from China, or 22 comes from the US, 20 comes from China. That may be a little worrisome too, given demand dynamics there. But I think overall it's a fine business. It's just, there's nothing that I see that really excites me that much. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate you as always, Luke.
Have a good day. Talk to you soon. We love live calls, but we also have plenty of voicemails. Let's play one that came in earlier on the VIX.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is a question about the VIX. The question is, what makes the VIX go up or go down? You mentioned that this is the peer index at some point in the show. My understanding is that it goes up when there is a little put calls on the S&P. Can you please tell us more about how this works? And if it peaked in the last 2 weeks to 60, what does that tell us? And if it drops from 60 to 20, that this means that the trades, the insurance trades are removed from the market? Or anyway, as you can see, I need some help here. You can explain for us this. This would be amazing.
Okay, so it's complicated, first and foremost, but I'll try and explain it as simply as possible. And so the VIX index, which is typically called the fear gauge by market observers, is calculated based upon the implied volatility of options on the S&P 500 30 days out. So in a simplistic way, a higher number means that the options on the index, the S&P, the implied volatility of those options are higher, which means that it is expected within the next 30 days there to be more volatility if the number's higher and less volatility if the number's lower. Now, volatility works both ways, but typically you see more volatility in price swings in down markets rather than stable markets or up markets. And so when you had that steep sell-off early last week, it's accompanied by a rise in the VIX because volatility is increasing. Now, taking a step further back, implied volatility is a calculation based upon various factors that go into option pricing, and implied volatility is the output. But the story to know here is that when VIX is up, it means the expectation of the market to be more volatile in the next 30 days. When the VIX comes back down, the volatility expectation is lower based upon those option markets, not just a made-up number. And so generally speaking, fear, when there's a lot, or when the number's higher, is because you expect more of a whipsaw. Stable upward markets tend to be when that number is lower. So that can tell you a lot about how you might want to trade your portfolio. The age-old saying is be greedy when others are fearful. And certainly, you know, we were buying for our clients when there was some names that were on some steep discounts that recovered. And so for me, if you're a long-term investor, when you see those momentary spikes, I think it's a great opportunity to buy in. Thanks for the call. Let's shift gears back to something we've talked about multiple times already, and that is oil, but more specifically, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, more commonly known as OPEC. And so they recently revised their forecast for global oil demand growth, lowering expectations primarily due to a weaker outlook from China. So let's run down some of the key details from OPEC's latest report. The first is regarding demand forecast adjustments. OPEC's adjusted its growth forecast for oil demand this year to an increase of 2.11 million barrels per day, down from their previous estimate of 2.25 million barrels per day. This revision is based on actual data from the first half of the year and softer expectations for China, which is experiencing a burdensome and continued economic slowdown that are affecting global oil markets. Now, despite these revisions, global oil demand is still expected to be pretty robust. For next year, OPEC slightly reduced its growth forecast from 1.78 million barrels to 1.85, or rather to 1.78 million barrels from 1.85 million barrels. And another takeaway is regarding price influences and geopolitical concerns. Oil prices have been volatile and influenced by tensions, not just in the Middle East, which are certainly heightening now, but also ongoing hostilities in Eastern Europe between Russia and the Ukraine. Additionally, disruptions like the slowdown of Libya's largest oil field are impacting supply. And should the climate continue to destabilize, there would be an effect on oil markets and output. There's also still uncertainty about whether OPEC Plus will start to phase out these cuts in October, as previously planned, given the current market dynamics. And so OPEC has raised its economic growth forecast for the U.S., certainly good news for us, this year from 2.2% to 2.4%, while global economic growth estimates still remain steady. It's not all bad news. Lastly, the report touches on central banking policy. Looking ahead, key central banks may adopt more accommodative monetary policies to support economic growth, potentially affecting commodities like oil. These policies, along with ongoing adjustments in core inflation rates, will certainly be important for factors, or will be important factors rather, for market watchers. Let's head back to the YouTube comment section. This time, a question about INTC. It says, does INTC, Intel's announcement it is laying off thousands and its recent big drop change your opinion on the company being a good value? I know Justin thought it was a good value risk proposition. Seems this makes it even more attractive for the long term. I just picked up some more. So we've got a lot of questions recently about Intel, even before the most recent drop. It certainly has been having a tough time. I think it had its largest one-day drop in terms of percentage in 50 years. So certainly not, there's a lot of things that are going wrong for that company. Now, a couple months ago, I think I got the question at some point about Intel, and my opinion was that the U.S. government is trying to spend money through the CHIPS Act on creating a more robust way for us to go about semi-production. And Intel steps in, a well-known, well-established player within the tech space, and says, we are going to invest to create a foundry model, where rather than outsourcing all of the production to Taiwan, places that we don't necessarily have as much geopolitical control over what's going to happen, and there's some disputes in the area, we're going to do it internally within our own company and not having to outsource to other companies that may be in potentially destabilized areas of the world. And so with that, the U.S. government gave them a bunch of money, billions. And part of that condition was hiring, something that they've now gone against. They're firing a bunch of employees. They've said they're going to fire a bunch of employees. But in essence, that kind of led a lot of people to believe, well, maybe we're going to see some growth. Now, the recent earnings show the exact opposite. They're still fledgling. They're still burdened from poor decisions from their previous two CEOs. And so when you're faced with the reality of what's happening, you have to maybe adjust what your opinion is, right? Educated people react to what happens in front of them. Your opinions can change. That's okay. That means you're paying attention. That means you're learning. And so where we are now is Intel is trading at 0.7 times its book value. It's essentially trading at its tangible book value. What does that mean? It's trading at essentially that is a price that would be the liquidation value of the company. Now, does that mean the market thinks it's going to be liquidated? No, maybe. But what it does mean is that it's a pretty risky trade, and they have a lot to recover from. Now, I personally think that if you have the risk appetite, this is a cheap price. Does that mean it's not going to get cheaper? I cannot predict where this is going to go tomorrow, next week, next month. All we can do is look at companies, look at their fundamentals, look at the macro environment, look at the environment in which they operate, look at the moats they have, look at the strength of the business, and look at the growth potential and make a decision based upon what we think is going to happen. The rest is out of our hands. And so if you're willing to take the risk, I think a foundry model for chip production is a big bet that could really pay off. But it's important to know it also might not. So understand the risks. If you're invested in Intel, just because something was way higher in price doesn't mean it's going to get back there. There are certainly a lot of risks here. The market is signaling it with its current relative value. Thanks for watching. This is Invest Talk now with more than 59 million downloads. Let's keep it going and play another caller question.
Hey, Justin Luke, Bill from Philadelphia. I'm calling about two ETFs. The first, VOOG. And the second, QQQM. I own both and was wondering if I should be owning both, basically. Is there overlap in both of them, or one I should own over the other? I wanted to get your thoughts. I like both of them. Both of them great for me so far, but I do want to see if owning both is basically not really advantageous and I should just cut one of them and then possibly allocate those funds to something else. Looking forward to your response and love what you guys do. Bye-bye.
So VOOG is the first one. That is the Vanguard S&P 500 Growth ETF. It's a large cap ETF, primarily in tech, 64% in tech, 7% in healthcare, 6% in consumer non-cyclicals. Charges about 10 basis points in an expense ratio. Its top holdings, 12% Microsoft, 11% NVIDIA, 11% Apple, 7% Alphabet. Now, QQQM is the Invesco NASDAQ 100 ETF, 15 basis point expense ratio, large caps, 63% in tech, 10% in consumer non-cyclicals, 6% healthcare. Top holdings, 9% Apple, 8% Microsoft, 7% NVIDIA, 5% Alphabet. There's a lot of overlap here. To the point where, in my opinion, just looking at this, You're paying 5 basis points more for QQQM in order to get slightly more diversified. 100 names, 51% in the top 10. Whereas the Vanguard Fund is 233 names, but 60% is in the top 10, right? We're talking about two different types of diversification. Number of names is one of them, but concentration is the other. And so, generally speaking, the dynamics that drive these two funds are going to be very similar. I personally probably would go towards QQQM, because even though you're paying 5 basis points more, a lot less of it is concentrated within the top 10 names. And you're not going to have massive exposure to the companies that certainly have been doing well generally. There's been some pullbacks, but they've been doing well generally. But you have a lot more exposure to Microsoft, a lot more exposure to NVIDIA, a lot more exposure to Apple. And so I would err for, in your ETFs being a little bit more broad, you're probably going to get mostly the same return profile for both of these names. But I would expect, given better diversification, that hopefully the volatility for QQQM would be a little bit better. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk, and I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin. Based in Los Angeles, California, I'm a holder of Starbucks and Chevron. I kind of bought in the high range of Chevron. I'm like at 170. Just wanted to see what your take is on Chevron. And Starbucks as well. I bought it like around the 100 range. Now it's in the 70s. So just wanted to see if you think it's a long-term hold, if they got good fundamentals. Just want to hear your insight. I love your show. Thank you.
Well, hopefully you fared better than my cats did during the earthquake today, given that you're based in Los Angeles. But certainly if you know people from LA, we love talking about earthquakes when they happen. If you ever go on Twitter, when an earthquake happens, that's all people talk about. So I'll stop talking about that now, and we'll talk about Chevron and Starbucks. We actually hold both for our clients in different strategies for two reasons. One, we hold Chevron because we think it's well positioned to capture rise in oil demand going into early to mid next year. Something that even OPEC said today, looking into 2025, things are looking better because Chinese demand will start picking up. Now, we entered in both of these names a little bit lower. I think for Starbucks, certainly, we got in the 70s. But we think that Starbucks also has some value as well. Why? Because Starbucks, in their most recent earnings report, talked about their biggest issue, which is something I've talked about on the show before, which is an inability to capture clients that want to buy, customers that want to buy coffee from them. Both of these companies are involved in different types of liquid gold. One, the lifeblood of the economy, oil. One, the lifeblood of a lot of workers such as myself. And so I think both of these companies are positioned to, for different reasons, do well in the long term. You certainly bought in at some pretty high prices relative to where they are now. But that's the benefit of dollar cost averaging, right? You bring down your overall average cost per share. And so certainly with both of these names, we hold them for clients. We think for different reasons, they're good in the long term. Thanks for the call. Now, this past week, portfolio managers at hedge funds took a cautious step back, trimming some of their riskier investments after I think calling it turbulent, a turbulent period is pretty generous in global markets. And what triggered that period is something that I've already mentioned today, and that is a massive unwind of yen-funded trades and growing concerns about a potential U.S. recession. And so the volatility that a lot of people suffered, we talked about the VIX already, the volatility proved challenging for many hedge funds, particularly those in global macro quant strategies and heavily focused in the tech sector. They saw losses ranging from 1.5 to 4% even in early August. A lot of what happened was driven by fund deleveraging broadly. And so the recent market dynamics have led to a understandably more cautious stance amongst investors. Generally speaking, when you have this type of unwinding this quickly with this much volatility, investors will remain cautious. But what about recent trends before last week? Well, according to the Office of Financial Research's Hedge Fund Monitor, hedge fund leverage was, as of March, at a decade high, substantial borrowing as of the end of March. Now, recent market movements have prompted significant unwinding of positions, particularly among commodity trading advisors who adjusted their strategies following disappointing U.S. jobs data at the start of August. And yet, though much of the activity was driven by market structure, the U.S. economy remains in critical focus, recent data raising fears of recession. Now, this concern is reflected in the actions of these hedge funds, which, despite benefiting from the market conditions, are starting to take profits and reassess their positions. With the Federal Reserve's next meeting in September, the market is uncertain, split between pretty evenly on whether the Fed will cut 25 or 50 basis points. And overall, the prevailing uncertainty and the potential for continued volatility seems likely to influence investment strategies in the coming months, the coming weeks, the coming quarters, the coming year. With economic uncertainty, with rising tensions in the Middle East, with political uncertainty. But for long-term investors, I have already said it, maybe even twice today, be greedy when others are fearful. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Now, I haven't mentioned it a lot today, but I think I mentioned it twice, and that is we are now available on YouTube. Just search InvestTalk with two T's. If you're interested in leaving us a comment question, we'd like to get to those as quickly as possible. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.